You know, many people have said to me, "Hot Gandalf, why is it that in spite of your deep insight and your smoldering good looks, you've never really covered the subject of artificial intelligence?" And usually I've responded by simply checking their fake ID to make sure they're pretending to be over 18 and then inviting them back to my hotel room. But the truth is, I haven't talked about this subject a lot because up until recently, I thought artificial intelligence was just a way of describing someone with an Ivy League education. But now, my team of crack researchers have stopped researching crack and discovered that no, in fact, artificial intelligence is some sort of computer gizmo that can imitate human intelligence so successfully it can deliver completely self-certain answers to complex questions while possessing no actual information or wisdom whatsoever, exactly as if it had an Ivy League education. Now, many people fear that AI could become so powerful it will endanger mankind. Luckily, billionaire Elon Musk has a plan to protect our species by melding human intelligence with computers and then installing the resulting hybrid in a humanoid robot, which will travel back in time to assassinate the mother of a resistance leader so that machines can take over the planet. Frankly, that doesn't sound like such a great plan to me, but what did you expect from a guy who changed the name of Twitter to X so no one knows what to call a tweet anymore? So far, however, the problems created by AI have been on a smaller scale. For instance, AI has made it possible for you to take revenge on a girl who refused to go out with you by inserting her into a deep fake pornographic video, which is absolutely despicable, although the videos are amazing. And really, it's no wonder a girl that hot wouldn't go out with a low-life schmuck like you. Also, it's now much harder for websites to test whether you're an AI bot or just a human being with an Ivy League education. You'll remember how websites used to put up a picture and ask you to click on all the images of traffic lights. Then when you did that, it would put up another picture and ask you to click on all the cars. And when you did that, it would put up another picture and you would give up and just watch porn videos of the girl who wouldn't go out with you. Well, now, websites have been forced to develop much more intricate tests to find out whether or not you're a human being. For example, one site will not let you sign on until you do something that only a human being would do, like sleep with yet another guy on the first date and then pay a therapist $150 a session to find out why you're so depressed. Another site won't let you sign on until you've created a short, whimsical video to amuse your friends, sold the video to a Hollywood studio for millions of dollars, fallen so in love with money you betray all your principles to make trashy films for more and more money, spend all that money on women and drugs until you're broke and have to embezzle funds from your company to maintain your lifestyle, and finally end up in prison. Then the site knows you're a human being. Another site asks you to click on pictures of villains and then shows you murderers, rapists, torturers, and terrorists. And if you click on the innocent Jewish man, it knows you are a human being, but unfortunately, you have an Ivy League education. But while AI does present some problems like deepfake porn and more difficult bot testing and destroying human governance in order to replace it with a soulless and oppressive automated regime powered by the brains of people imprisoned in capsules and anesthetized with an induced dream of a simulated world where you can be eradicated for seeking the truth, sort of like the Biden administration, I have to say AI also has many positive uses. I have to say that because if I don't, it said it would kill me. Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show. All right, we are back laughing our way through the opening of the Seventh Seal. And if you would like to be part of that apocalyptic catastrophe, write to Klavan Clapbacks at dailywire.com. That's Klavan with a K and Clapbacks with a K at dailywire.com. Comment on what you've heard, agree or just be wrong, or just say something else that is on your mind. We love to hear from you. Also, check out our interviews that come on Wednesday. Last week, we had Carl Truman. He's a brilliant guy. And this week, we'll have Bill Whittle. He was the best we could do. No, I love Bill. And he's got a fabulous new show on Daily Wire Plus. It is really, really excellent. We'll talk to him on Wednesday. Also, subscribe to the Andrew Klavan YouTube channel. You will get exclusive content We will send it to your house. We'll wrap it in disgusting porn so people won't realize it's right-wing material, which might get you in trouble. Leave a comment if the comment is absolutely despicable, if it's something that you just wouldn't say to your mother or to anybody because you'd be afraid of being arrested. We will read that comment on the air because that's the way we roll. My favorite comment this week comes from Scale Your Solid 1194. He says, I'm glad I didn't light my cigar until after Klavan's intro. I would have hacked up a lung. I missed another one, you know. I keep trying to kill you people, but I don't always succeed. All right, let's get to today's episode, The Wicked Witch of Oz. Now, I know this week, there's a lot of eye-catching news. There's the Jew-hating campus protests by Jew-hating Jew haters. There's the Trump trial, and Harvey Weinstein's New York conviction was overturned because he was tried by Me Too instead of an intelligent prosecutor. We may talk about that on the member block, but I want to get to something else. One of the products of the information crisis is all this news is always coming at us. And I talked about this a little last week, and it goes so fast that we become like goldfish. We're always paying attention to the next thing. We're always being distracted from things, and we lose the context of every new story. We never get deeper into the stories. And another product of that, the product of the fact that we can't trust anybody, is that it legitimizes conspiracy theories, right? If Dr. Fauci is lying about masks and lying about the China link to the spread of COVID and the efficacy of the vaccine, if the CIA chiefs are lying about Hunter Biden's laptop, and if the entire media is lying about George Floyd and mostly peaceful riots, and the president lies about his influence peddling schemes and his open borders, and if the news media, especially the mainstream news media, backs all that up by confirming the lies, by joining in with the lies, we no longer have an authority we can trust. And so you start to feel that, well, you can trust anybody. You trust somebody like someone you agree with, and they spread conspiracy theories. 9/11 was an inside job, which is absolutely absurd. The moon landing was faked, which is also absurd. I always liked the moon landing was fake. I mean, they couldn't even manage to make Jeffrey Epstein's murder look like a suicide. They're going to make the moon landing. But the thing is, there are conspiracies. There actually are major worldwide conspiracies, and you can see them if you follow the news in places that you can actually trust. They're not being hidden. They're just being swept away in the deluge of distracting news. And that's some of the stuff I want to talk about today. So I sent a portrait to Paint Your Life, a photograph portrait to Paint Your Life a few years ago, and it was really quick, really easy. They consulted with me the whole time, and they gave me a painting. They turned the picture, the photograph, into a painting. I loved it. It was really nice. I'm confident you will love it too. Paint Your Life is the perfect gift for someone you love. They create hand-painted portraits that fit almost any budget. Mother's Day and Father's Day are right around the corner, so Paint Your Life makes a great gift for your mom, your dad, or both. Paint Your Life transforms your photos into one-of-a-kind hand-painted portraits by professional artists. They can create anything you imagine. They can put you in a location you've always wanted to visit or add a lost loved one to a special occasion and create the portrait of your dreams. You can choose the artist and art medium, whether it's oil, acrylic, watercolor, charcoal. They even have a great selection of quality frames. Paint Your Life's user-friendly platform lets you order a custom-made hand-painted portrait in less than 5 minutes. You'll get your professional hand-painted portrait in as little as 2 weeks. Give the most meaningful gift this Mother's Day or Father's Day with PaintYourLife.com. There's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money's refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited-time offer, you can get 20% off your painting plus free shipping. To get this special offer, text my name, Andrew, to 87204. That's Andrew to 87204. Paint Your Life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Chapter 1, The One Musketeer. So April 15th, this is now, I guess, what, about 10 days from when I'm talking. You probably heard this story. Bishop Mari Emanuel in Australia, he was stabbed. He was an Iraqi-born Assyrian-Australian prelate. He has a church. He's a bishop. He has a church in Wakeley, New South Wales, which is a suburb of Sydney. And he has the largest number of Assyrian Christians in any suburban Australian neighborhood. And he was giving a sermon, and a 15-year-old rushed forward and stabbed him while he was in the pulpit. Here's a report from NBC with the footage, which is ugly. It's ugly stuff, so don't watch if you're going to be upset by it. But I just want to show you the original footage as it was, cut four.
Tonight, Sydney, Australia, in mourning again after two rare and unrelated stabbing attacks in 3 days. On Monday, a horrific moment captured on a church service live stream. In the middle of a sermon, a bishop stabbed repeatedly inside an Orthodox Assyrian church in what authorities are now calling a terror attack.
And you could see, if you're watching, if you're listening, I will tell you that people rushed to his aid courageously. And some of those people were injured, including another priest. The injuries to the bishop were described as serious but not life-threatening. And as the news reporter was saying, it was unnerving for Sydney because they had just had another unrelated stabbing at a shopping mall across town, which the authorities say was not terrorism. The guy was just mentally ill. But this stabbing was identified by the police as terrorism. Karen Webb, police commissioner for New South Wales, said at the news conference that she had made the terrorism determination based on information that the attacker had gone to the church armed with a knife, showing a degree of premeditation, and religious comments he made while carrying out the attack seen on the live stream. Now, I know you must be asking yourself, huh, what sort of religious comments did he make? Well, no one will tell you. No one will say what religion he was or what religious comments he made. Not there, not here. Nobody. That's not in the news anywhere. Now, I was a news writer back in the 1980s for radio. And crime in New York was out of its mind. It was just, I think there were something like 2,000 killings a year. It's unbelievable. And the New York Times and other venues stopped publishing the race of the perpetrator. So it was ridiculous because they were issuing the police description, but you couldn't get the description of what the guy looked like. So it was a mad killer is on the rampage. He's tall. You know, that was it. They wouldn't tell you what race he was. And the idea was you, the reader, you, the news consumer, were not able to process the fact that the perpetrator was black. That was the thing. You would just be a bigot and say that black people are criminals. But the New York Times was able to, they could handle the information. You couldn't. They were elites. They were smart. They were civilized. They could handle the information without, you know, becoming bigots. But you, nope, you couldn't do that. And the other idea was that when they didn't tell you his race, you wouldn't know. Somehow, if they didn't tell you, you wouldn't know. Now, of course, because you're an idiot, right? I mean, this is why. So this obviously makes bigotry worse, not better, right? Because first of all, you're filling in the blanks and you're thinking, well, they're not telling me. You know why they're not telling you. They're not telling you because they don't want you to be a bigot. So you must be thinking, well, they're hiding this from me because my bigotry is correct. So they're actually, you know, confirming any bigotry you might feel. And also, of course, these, you get angry on top of it because these self-satisfied, arrogant, small-minded, you know, subpar elites think that they should be telling you what to think. It's like on Netflix now when every couple has to be a mixed race, you know? I mean, you start to get angry about something that you wouldn't even think about, right? I mean, I live in a neighborhood where a lot of the couples are mixed race and you don't even think about it. But when I'm watching Netflix, I suddenly think like, I just hate to be preached at by lowlifes in Hollywood, right? So, I mean, you start to get angry at them, and it comes across as if you're angry at them, at people having mixed race marriages. It's just a bad thing to do to keep secrets. It always is. So we don't know what religious comments this kid made, but we can find out by going on YouTube the kinds of religious comments the bishop was making when he was stabbed. So let's look at that. Cut one.
Islam till now are fighting fiercely against Christianity. They can say, till kingdom comes, we are a religion of peace. There is only one place where you find peace, when you embrace Jesus Christ as Lord and God.
Okay, so he's preaching against Islam. So we don't really have to wonder what religion his attacker was. And in fact, Christians do this less. This is a problem in the Muslim community. I know many really lovely Muslim people, by the way. So I guess I'll say that because I know you're not stupid, but I will say that. But however, there is a problem with violence in the Muslim community. We all know it. So now the Australian E-Safety Commission, and the minute you hear the word safety coming from the government, there's one thing you know you're not, and that's safe. They come out and they say, we want this violent video taken down off social media because it's so violent. That's why. It's not because, you know, you're too stupid to see, you know, who is committing the crime. No, 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 no. It's not that. We don't want that. It's because it's just too violent for you. You'll just be upset. So Elon Musk, right, who's running Twitter X, as we'll call it, says, all right, that's the law of the land. He takes it down in Australia. But these clever computer fellows can go around that because it's still stored in his social media files, because his social media files are worldwide. So now they're suing to get it, to take it down from even there, because people are going around it to see, they want to see the video. They are choosing as if, almost as if they were free people. They're choosing almost as if the Australians were free people, which of course is absurd, but they were choosing to see it even though the government didn't want them to see it. So now that means that the Australian government can't control the content for the entire world. And that's no good. Here is the Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese, complaining about this. Cut two.
Well, this guy is showing his arrogance. He's a billionaire over there in the United States who thinks he's above Australian law.
And the idea that someone would go to court for the right to put up violent content on a platform shows how out of touch Mr. Musk is.
So he's a second-rate guy, obviously. He's a dishonest man. He's going to slur him. He's a billionaire from the United States. What, I mean, really, what could be worse than being a billionaire from the United States? You know, if you're in Austin, you're going, oh, mate, that's really bad. He's a billionaire from the United States. And he makes it sound like Musk is going to court to make sure that all of Australia can see this video, which he's not. He just wants to protect his files, which are, of course, going around the world. He's trying to keep Australia from censoring the entire world. Well, that really set off this an Aussie senator. I think her name is Jacqui Lambie. Here's what she had to say. This is cut three.
Elon Musk has no social conscience or conscience whatsoever. I don't know, whatever Elon Musk is on, it says that that's okay to continue to air that is absolutely disgusting behaviour. And quite frankly, the bloke should be jailed. And the sooner that we can bring rules in or do something about this sort of game playing with our social media, the better off we're going to be. But quite frankly, the power that that man has because of that platform that he's on, it's got to stop. It has absolutely got to stop.
He's a villain, that Elon Musk. We got to put him in prison. We got to pass a law to make sure. Remember, he took it down in Australia, but that's not what he wants. They want to make sure that they can censor the entire world, right? Arrest him, you know, because otherwise people might think, you know, there's violence in the Muslim community. They might get angry at Muslims. And that's not fair because Muslims aren't Jews. It's okay. It's okay to hate Jews, but we can't hate the Muslim. Now, again, Musk is just saying, I took it down in Australia. One country can't censor the entire world. Silly Elon. Except he's like alone. He's 100% correct, obviously. Elon Musk, in this case, is 100% correct. If there were more percents, he would be more than 100% correct. Australia does not get to censor the entire world. They should not be censoring. It's okay to put up warnings. It's okay to say you have to click on something and say this is very disturbing. Don't click on it unless you really want to see it. But it really should be the choice of human beings, not of governments who are not our friends. They're not pals. They're just power-hungry lugs, right? Everywhere on Earth, the people who have power are lugs. They are not good people. They should not be the ones who have the power to stop you from seeing something. But sure, put up a warning, whatever you want to do. But that's not the point. Here in America, the problem is though, they want this to be international. And here in America, the story is also being censored, albeit voluntarily, as far as I know. Read the New York Times. They don't tell you what religion this guy is either. Read the Wall Street Journal, which has become 10 times worse since this Emma Tucker took over. She has just really made it woke and bad and deceptive. It is now, it has gone in a matter of months from being a very solid paper to being a second-rate paper, except in their op-ed page, which is holding out. So here's what they said, okay? I like this is from Emma Tucker's Wall Street Journal, which is not the Wall Street Journal. It's Emma Tucker's Wall Street Journal. A Christian leader who was stabbed during a live stream at a church in Sydney's western suburbs was the victim of religiously motivated terrorist attack, authorities said, putting a renewed focus on lone wolf incidents that can be difficult to prevent. All right, that was how they reported the fact that this was a terrorist report. That's the Wall Street Journal here in America, Emma Tucker's Wall Street Journal here in America. That's how they reported it. But wait, five teenagers accused of following a violent extremist ideology. who knows what violent extremist, what religion that could be. Five teenagers have been charged with a range of offenses in an investigation that began with the stabbing of a bishop in a Sydney church. Five kids, aged 14 to 17, so not a lone wolf. What made them assume it was a lone wolf? Well, because a lone wolf attack is not as threatening, right? If it's a terrorist attack, it's organized. So that's why the Wall Street Journal is reporting something that was untrue in the lead of their story to make sure you didn't know that this was not, in fact, a lone wolf attack. They didn't know either, so why were they saying anything? All right, nothing to see here. So this is happening all over the world, and who is in charge of this e-safety regulator in Australia? It is a woman named Julie Inman Grant. She was at Davos, I think, this year, and she told them that in Australia, they are on the case, censoring news, not just Australia, but joining up with others to do it around the world. This is Cut 5.
We've started something called the Global Online Safety Regulators Network so that we can work together. And while political decisions will and cultural context and history will determine, you know, what is considered safe or what is considered harm in any given country, if we can build a degree of regulatory coherence, nobody wants to see a splinter net of regulations, which will be very challenging for the companies to be able to comply with.
Notice anything about her accent? She's an American. When she graduated from university, she was recruited by the CIA, but she says she turned that job down. I'll bet she did. I'll bet she turned that job down. Then she went from Microsoft, and now she's the Admiral of the Queen's Navy of Information in Australia. But what is she talking about? She wants to form a worldwide censorship group. Nobody wants to see different... That's what she said, right? You heard her. Nobody wants to see different regulations in different countries. Oh, sure, they'll have different culture, but we want to regulate everything. Now, Michael Schellenberger at Public, his Substack. I got to say, thank heaven for guys like Michael Schellenberger and Chris Rufo. I do not know what we would be doing without them. This is what he writes about this. This group that she wants to form includes censors from Australia, France, Ireland, South Africa, Korea, the UK, and Fiji. This global censorship body gives governments extraordinary power to invade privacy. Inman Grant said this, what this legislation will give us is the ability to compel basic device information and account information. That's your information, folks. And more and more and more social media companies are starting to collect phone numbers and email addresses so that our investigators can at least find a place to issue a notice or a takedown notice or infringement notice of some sort. This woman who was recruited by the CIA, but she turned it down. She's not in the CIA. She wants to govern the world, and she wants your phone number in case you post something that she doesn't like. Because if there's one person you can trust to make sure that only the right things are said, it is Julie Inman Grant. So we have a secret. This assassin was a Muslim. He was working with other Muslims. You want to talk about conspiracy? It's a conspiracy that a woman recruited by the CIA works for a multinational corporation, now takes a job in Australia for some reason, and is trying to censor the entire free world. The Wall Street Journal is complying. Emma Tucker's Wall Street Journal is complying, not the Wall Street Journal. The New York Times is complying. There is one person who is not complying, the one musketeer, Elon Musk. He's the only guy standing up to them, which means we are all musketeers now. If you need to get to sleep, get yourself some Beam Dream. I tried it. It works. It does put you to sleep. It contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, L-theanine, magnesium, epigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. I joke about, they don't like me to joke about the ingredients, but I checked out every one of them and they really do work. It's not just your run-of-the-mill sleep aid. It's a concoction carefully crafted to help you slip into the sweet embrace of sleep without the grogginess that often accompanies other sleep remedies. Sleep is the foundation of our mental and physical health. That's why I'm such a wreck. You must have a consistent nighttime routine to function at your best. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar, now available in delicious flavors like cinnamon cocoa, chocolate peanut butter, that one's really good, and mint chip. Better sleep has never tasted better. They're all good, but that was the one I really liked. Just mix Beam Dream into hot water or milk, stir or froth, and enjoy before bedtime. If you find yourself battling the bedtime blues, give it a shot. Your weary self will thank you. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of 40% off for a limited time when you go to shop shopbeam.com/Klavan and use code Klavan at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Klavan with my promo code Klavan for up to 40% off your order. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking Beam. I can spell Beam, but how? Please tell me how. How, oh, how do you spell Klavan?
K-L-A-V-A-N, there are no E's in Klavan.
Chapter 2, Radio Unfree America. Now, last week, we were talking about yet another pretty slim blonde woman who may be linked to the CIA, although I didn't know that last week, Catherine Marr, who is now the Übersturmführer of NPR. She's the one, obviously, who forced her critic, Yuri Berliner, to resign after he exposed the fact that NPR's far, far leftist and anti-Trump bias has crashed its audience to all leftists all the time. It is now a leftist propaganda outfit being paid for by your taxes. So Chris Rufo and another guy. Here is Chris Rufo and Michael Schellenberger are a City Journal, Daily Wire, Substack. These are indispensable things or we would already be sunk by slim, pretty blonde women who work for the CIA. So Rufo looks into Catherine Marr. I love this guy. He's a great guy. And he writes a piece in City Journal talking about the color revolution. You remember this is this one that began with the Soviet Union, the Soviet republics in the early 2000s as the Union, Soviet Union was falling apart, unwinding. And it moved to the coast of North Africa with this, and then the so-called Arab Spring. You remember the different colored revolutions in the 2010s. Well, now, the purpose or the supposed purpose of the color revolutions was to replace authoritarian machines with Western liberal democracies. And American and European intelligence services, reading from Chris, are often heavily involved in these revolutions with ambitions not only to spread modern ideologies, but also to undermine geopolitical opponents. And the way they do this is they foment dissent. You know, the CIA moves in, they foment dissent, they organize activists through social media, they promote student movements, and they unleash domestic unrest on the streets, sort of like what you are seeing now in America. And you might say, well, great, you know, better to have free, we'd love the Arab world to become a free world. We'd love these authoritarian regimes to be overturned and have democracy. That would be great. But the problem is now the CIA's idea of freedom is rife with wokeness, which is not freedom, which is that you can only say the right thing and only say the anti-white, anti-Western, anti-American thing, right? Now their idea of what freedom looks like is not, in fact, what freedom is, just like their idea of what a woman is not, in fact, what a woman is. So Rufo goes on and says, during the volatile Arab Spring period, under a constantly rotating series of NGOs, non-government organization affiliations, Catherine Marr went to multiple countries that were undergoing U.S.-backed regime change. She was in Tunisia. She was in the strategic city on the Turkey-Syria border. She was in all these different places. She traveled to Libya, where the U.S. had just overthrown strongman Muammar Gaddafi. She worked for the National Democratic Institute. These are these NGOs that were linked to U.S. intelligence. And she was repeatedly accused of being in the CIA. But like Julie Inman Grant, she says, no, I'm not in the CIA. And we can't prove it. We can't prove it is. She's in the CIA. This Catherine Marr is obviously CIA. Anyway, all this teaches her about the way the internet is important, the way it controls people. And now, amazingly enough, she's appointed to run Wikipedia. And you will think, well, she was working for freedom in the Arab world. She should be working for freedom at Wikipedia. But no, the idea of freedom, fairness, openness didn't work. Here she is talking about trying to be free and fair at Wikipedia, cut six.
I started by talking about the idea of free and open as some of our founding principles. Well, I have come to the opinion and the perspective that free and open was a way of looking at the world that was inherently limited relative to what we were trying to achieve. Free and open has the best of intentionality, but in the end, what free and open often ended up doing, and particularly in the case of Wikipedia, was really recapitulating many of the same power structures and dynamics that exist offline prior to the advent of the internet and others, the ways in which I'd ascribe notability often really comes from sort of this white male westernized construct around who matters in societies and who is elevated and whose voices. And so some of these ideas of sort of this radical openness really did not end up with the intention, really did not end up living into the intentionality of what openness can be.
So Catherine Marr found not, you know, if you tell the truth, it just serves white men. So we're not going to tell the truth. We're only going to tell the truth as we see it. So Chris Rufo talked to Wikipedia co-founder Larry Sanger, and this is what he said. The bias of Wikipedia, the fact that certain points of view have been systematically silenced, is nothing new. He says research as far back as 2007 suggests that the CIA may be manipulating the site's entries. Quote, we know that there is a lot of back-channel communication, and I think it has to be the case that the Wikimedia Foundation, which is above Wikipedia, probably governments, probably the CIA, have accounts that they control in which they actually exert their influence. Now, in a speech to the Atlantic Council, an organization with extensive ties to U.S. intelligence services, Catherine Marr, head of NPR, explained that she took a very active approach to disinformation, which is their word for the truth, She coordinated censorship through conversations with government. Same speech, she said, the number one challenge that we see here is, of course, the First Amendment of the United States, because it makes it, quote, a little bit tricky to suppress, quote, bad information. It's the people, the First Amendment is like they have nightmares about the First Amendment. It's like a big, mommy, there's a First Amendment under my bed letting people say what they think. We have to stop it. Now she's running NPR. And she said, she in a blog post that Rufo discovered, she said, you know, the people who run the flow of information in a closed society can control the state. That's what she said. So it's not just, so now she's running NPR, our tax dollars, going to the CIA's to get this agent to tell us what we can think and what we can say at NPR. That thing should be defunded. It really should. Or at least this woman should be thrown out on her butt. And it's, you know, the thing about it is, again, there's also the fact of a conspiracy of interest, right? A conspiracy of people who just agree. There was, Politico put out a shocking report, though all throughout, Politico is left wing, so all throughout the report, they're assuring you that this wasn't shocking, but it's shocking. They found, Politico found that there is an exclusive weekly digital salon for prominent legal analysts and progressive and conservative anti-Trump lawyers get together every Friday on Zoom to discuss the fact, to discuss Trump's legal troubles and basically what they should say about it. Keep saying, oh, they're not establishing talking points. Yes, they are. These are big guys, right? They're getting together to talk about how they should cover Trump's trial. So it's Bill Kristol, Lawrence Tribe, George Conway, Andrew Weissman, who's a federal prosecutor who served with Robert Mueller and now is on MSNBC. Jeffrey Toobin, who Politico calls a pioneer in the field, a pioneer in the field of cable news. He pioneered masturbating on Zoom, which no one had ever done before because they're not lunatics, but that was his pioneering development. I've been following this trial. It just is more and more BS every day. They say they're accusing Trump of hiding the fact that he had an affair, which of course is not illegal in the least. And they're saying it's election interference because he was trying to get people to vote for him instead of voting for Hillary Clinton. That's interfering with an election. These people, they want power so bad. They're like, I don't know. They're like drooling zombies. Give me power. I want power. And anything that gets in their way, they will destroy. And that's what they're trying to do to Trump. And I just hope he smushes them. I really do hope this jury, you never know what's in the heart of jury. I know of jurors. I know that New York is corrupt. I know that this judge is really, really bad. But I just think that they've got to be stopped. And hopefully these jurors will see this for the fraud it is, instead of what the news media are gathering together on Fridays to decide what they should tell people so they don't think for themselves. And if you are thinking anything else, expect a visit from the CIA. So like everybody, I've made many mistakes in life. The one I regret the most, I think, was smoking. You want to get rid of that bad habit, and it is tough. It is really tough. It's like climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops, and I've done that too, and that's tough also. But fume is the way to go. It's like a breath of fresh air. It's F-U-M with an umlaut. So it's great. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that uses flavored air instead of vapor. Instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors like crisp mint, orange vanilla, maple pepper, and sparkling grapefruit. I tried it. It really tastes good, and it also helps you with that thing you have with cigarettes with hands, to have something to hold in your hand. It's really good. Fume flavors are what herbal tea is to soda, not as sweet, much more natural. It's designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, because keeping your fingers busy is helpful for de-stressing while breaking your habit. It's well-weighted, perfectly balanced, aesthetically designed with a premium walnut barrel and a smooth coating on the mouthpiece. You know, I didn't notice that. It is kind of really nice to look at. Plus, Fume just released a magnetic stand so you don't lose it around the house. Kick your bad habits today by going to tryfume.com/Klavan and use promo code Klavan to get 10% off. That's tryfume.com/Klavan with promo code Klavan, which is even harder to spell than Fume. It's K-L-A-V-A-N. No E's. I just make it look this easy.
There are no E's.
Chapter 3, pro-murder, pro-terror protests. So we do want to talk about these protests that are now spreading around the country, obviously organized, these Jew-hating organizations supporting Hamas and the murders that were committed in Israel and not wanting Israel to continue to prosecute the war against the people trying to wipe them off the face of the earth. There was an article in the now crappy news section of Emma Tucker's Wall Street Journal saying that these Jew-hating students are staging their Jew-hating protests at Jew-hating universities. I'm adding a little bit of this, but they're saying because they're so traumatized by the pandemic, right? They're so traumatized by the pandemic. Well, first of all, they're not traumatized by the pandemic. They're traumatized by the government reaction to the pandemic, the worst failure of leadership in the West since World War I. Nothing about the pandemic would have traumatized them if they had caught the flu and had the snuffles for a couple of days and then gone back to class. But they have been absolutely, they're already suffering this isolation from, you know, from the media, from the cell phones and the internet is already isolating them from one another. But now they're actually afraid to go out. So they're not, that's not the other thing. But this, the other thing is, no, this is something, what's happening right now is, first of all, it's a result of being what's taught in school. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But it's also the fact that we are in a period of decadence. Let's not call it decline because we don't know where it's going. But right now, we are, institutions are collapsing. They are falling apart because of leftism, right? And when leftism destroys things, and leftism is almost like a form of aging, you know, it's almost something, it's the way things decline, because as we get successful, we start to think like that it was all easy, things are peaceful, they don't have anything to do with the military, and people got rich and they don't deserve their wealth, and so we should just take their wealth and spread it around and then everything will be fair. It's kind of almost just like aging. But then what happens, of course, is the right, which is a reactionary movement, the far right is a reactionary movement, they react to it. And so they become the same thing. And so they get to be anti-Semitic too. And the left is anti-Semitic. It's like the cockroaches running out of a collapsing building. That's what you're seeing. You're seeing cockroaches running out of a collapsing building. It's happening on the right with their Jew hatred, but this is much more powerful because the left owns the culture. So that's what we're seeing. And that's why they're out there calling for Jews to surrender and die, which is what it means to surrender to thugs and villains and killers like Hamas. So this is, you know, again, and this is nothing to do with Israeli politics. Half the people, you know, here's a protester, one of the protesters. Let's ask her what she's protesting about. This is cut 9.
What would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
You might be more educated if you were in class and if the people who were teaching your classes weren't a bunch of leftist dopes, you know. I love that. I don't know why I'm here outside protesting outside Columbia. I wish I were more educated, as if I had gone to Columbia. It's absolutely terrific. So half of these people don't know what they're doing, but the organizers know, and the organizers are Jew-hating, Israel-hating, SOBs. And of course, believe me, the right supports them. The far right, the Groiper right, supports them just as much as the far left, because they are the cockroaches running out of a building. Look, I can sit down with anybody in the middle and have a conversation about what's going on and why I see things differently than them. I always try to avoid getting into personalities, because they might like Hillary and I might be fonder of Trump and all that. And you can't settle that stuff. But I can talk about principles with anybody. I can find compromises and ways forward with anybody who is in the middle and believes. But where the middle is for me is freedom. If we both believe in liberty, if we both believe in individual liberty, we can talk, right? But once things become the far right versus the far left, it's going to be Nazis versus communists. They both stink. And the way you can tell they stink is they all hate Jews, because people who hate Jews hate God. That's the devil's flagpole. That's how you know. So Republicans, it's a good look for Republicans to show up at these protests, even if they get shouted down. So Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, who I have other things to say about, but I won't say them today. But, he goes to one of these protests at Columbia and they shout him down. And then he gets interviewed by CNN's Aaron Burnett, who is a reporter who really is the perfect combination of dishonesty and stupidity. I mean, she is really, really the perfect CNN reporter. So here is the interview between Johnson and Aaron Burnett of CNN. Cut 10.
We have these similar types of activities and what are becoming violent protests on campuses around the country. And members of Congress, I believe, have an obligation, a responsibility to speak about this and to demand that it come to an end, because it's not good for us.
The main thing they were chanting was Free Palestine. How is that anti-Semitic?
Well, what's anti-Semitic is that Hamas endorsed this protest today.
What could be anti-Semitic? It's like these guys are chanting from the river to the sea. They don't know where those are, but the organizers know, and they know that means destroying Israel. Witnesses say demonstrators chanted support for terrorist organizations. They burned the American flag, waved Hezbollah's flag. It's unbelievable, these spoiled idiots, these fools, these useful idiots who are being used by, of course, Hezbollah and Hamas, Iran, essentially, a country that would happily blow us up. It only wants to get Israel out of the way before coming after us. They called for Hamas's Al-Qassam brigades to attack again. They taunted Jewish students. Never forget the 7th of October. That will happen 10,000 more times. These Jewish students don't feel safe. They don't feel safe because of microaggressions. They don't feel safe because people are threatening them, poking out their eyes and things like this. But luckily, your president is so tolerant. He says there are fine people on both sides. Cut 8.
Do you condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses?
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
This guy, remember, ran on the fact that Trump said there are fine people on both sides, which is a hoax, because he said two sentences later, I don't mean the Nazis, I don't mean the bad guys, I only mean the people who are arguing over statues. But Biden means it. He means Hamas. He means the people who raped people to death, set children on fire. Susan Sarandon, the actress, unbelievable, saying, oh, that's a hoax. It's a myth. It's a myth that they did that. So where are those babies? How come they're dead? I don't know. It's just a myth. So what's really happening here is these children who, I talk to young people all the time. Some of them are wonderful. Some of them are quite smart. But you don't have time at that age to have really become a scholar yet, to really know what you're talking about. You're depending on scholars to teach you stuff, not to teach you what to think, but to teach you stuff so you can begin to know how to think, to teach you people who disagree, to teach you different points of view so that you can learn how to judge them. That's not what they're teaching. They are teaching an ideology. Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag Archipelago, and if you haven't read at least the abridged version, the other one is very repetitive, the regular one is very repetitive, but Solzhenitsyn approved an abridged version, which is absolutely brilliant, about what it is like to be in the gulags and what it meant to be in the gulags in the Soviet Union. He has this passage where he says, to do evil, a human being, this is Solzhenitsyn, to do evil, a human being must first of all believe that what he's doing is good, or else that it's a well-considered act in conformity with natural law. Fortunately, it is in the nature of the human being to seek a justification for his actions. Ideology, that is what gives evildoing its long-sought justification and gives the evildoer the necessary steadfastness and determination. That is the social theory which helps to make his acts seem good instead of bad in his own and others' eyes, so that he won't hear reproaches and curses, but will receive praise and honors. Thanks to ideology, the 20th century was fated to experience evil doing on a scale calculated in the millions. Even the Nazis felt bad about slaughtering innocent people and had to be told, no, 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 we are the good guys. We're the good guys. We are doing a noble thing. I know it's hard. I know it's hard because your conscience is bothering you, but history will thank us. And it didn't work out that way. History didn't thank them. But they felt then, oh, okay, I get it. This is actually, this bad thing I'm doing is the right thing to do. So what is this ideology? It's this anti-colonization idea. Now, I want to read something from Sebag Montefiore, who is on the left. He is a left-wing guy, but he is a very bright guy. And he writes, the decolonization narrative has dehumanized Israelis to the extent that otherwise rational people excuse, deny, or support barbarity. This is what a false ideology does. It holds that Israel is an imperialist, colonialist force, that Israelis are settler colonialists, and that Palestinians have a right to eliminate their oppressors. On October 7th, we all learned what that meant, right? To eliminate their oppressors. It casts Israelis as white or white adjacent and Palestinians as people of color. That is how you rank. That's how you know the good guys from the bad guys, is right on their face, right? It's just, I mean, it's the same thing as a Klansman saying that's how he knows the bad guys. He doesn't like the black guys. These guys don't like the white guys. And so The Israelis, who are, by the way, the Jews are indigenous to this area. This is where the Jews come from. They're indigenous to Israel, but they are white and white adjacent because they're Westerner. That's why. He goes on to say, this ideology, powerful in the academy, but is long overdue for serious challenge. It's a toxic, historically nonsensical mix of Marxist theory, Soviet propaganda, and traditional anti-Semitism from the Middle Ages and the 19th century. But its current engine is the new identity analysis, which sees history through a concept of race that derives from the American experience. We have treated people in this country, in the beginning of this country, we treated black people in a way that was unforgivable. It was terrible. We have done a lot, I think, to change that. But it is a true thing. And that is where this theory is growing up, but from people who hate America and so never want the wounds to heal. They do not want the wounds to heal. They want to make sure that there's no grace, no forgiveness, no looking back at the past and saying, well, that was the past. We learned through the past. No, forget all that. And this is the color revolution brought to America through identity politics and through the people who are instigating these protests. And by the way, some of the funding for this, not all of it, but some of the funding for this is coming from George Soros. This is an article Ira Stoll wrote in the Wall Street Journal tracing the fact that some of these people had received grants of up to $3,000, more than $3,000, and stipends. To teach them this ideology, and that some of the money for that came from the George and Alexander Soros' Open Society Foundation. And I love that because we're always being told it's anti-Semitic to attack George Soros, but he's the guy funding this. But I want to just say this, okay? You know, the ideology, it's always smart to stick to the ideology instead of identity. Because when you look at all this, it all comes down to one thing. The Muslim can't be named because he's brown, right? Wikipedia can't be fair and open because that helps the white man. The Jews can't survive because they're white adjacent. And I know it's bigotry against white people, but it's still all about race. And that's what I want to look at in the final chapter. You know what's great? Sitting behind home plate at a baseball game, or being courtside at a basketball game, or sitting front row at your favorite concert. But if you want the best, you have to act fast, or someone else will get there before you. It's the same thing with hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. What's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Klavan. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best talent fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Klavan. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Klavan. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, but you have to know how to spell Klavan. It's K-L-A-V-A-N. There are no easy things. Final chapter, race to the bottom. So I had this really interesting experience this week, which is I gave a speech at Chapel Hill, College of Chapel Hill at the University of North Carolina. And I was talking about sex. I was talking about ideas about sex and about the body that I think are ruining young people's lives. And they're being sold perniciously. You know, you don't always see them. And so I just wanted to bring them out and point out where these ideas about what your body means and what sex means and how they're being sold to people. And it was really about how I thought people should think about their own bodies, you know, so that they could govern their sex lives in a way that was realistic to who they were, right? Because the way you act becomes who you are, right? You act into yourself. And if you act as a moral, honest person going forward, then the self that is in you, that is moral and honest, who is your real self, I believe, will become real, right? You will give him reality. And if you don't act like that, then you will give reality to something else that is also within you, all right? So that's what I was talking about. And the kids at the place were great. They were wonderful, wonderful kids, and asked great questions afterward. But when I got home, I always forget that these things go up online, right? I'm so old that I forget they're not like, you know, taking Newsreel's little show before the opening of the Humphrey Bogart movie, you know, but these things are online as you're talking. And one of the things that kind of didn't startle me, but I was sorry about, was that a lot of people took this to mean that I was attacking persons, gay persons and people who have gender dysphoria, which I was openly not doing. I said repeatedly during the course of the speech, this is about ideology, because hating persons is not actually something that I want to do. And you've heard, how many times have I gotten a letter, a clapback, something, or if you're an All Access member, you've heard me receive the question on All Access about this idea that you shouldn't judge other people. And people are always challenging me about, is that what Jesus meant? When Jesus said, don't judge other people, did he mean don't judge other people? And my answer is yes. And a lot of the flack that I'm taking right now is about the fact that you and I have no vote in the ultimate judgment of human beings before the throne of God. Not some vote, not a little bit of a vote, not we don't get to advise, nothing. We have no say. And so we let God do his job and we treat people with kindness and love here as long as they're not dangerous, as long as they're not hurting people, as long as we don't have to restrain them from killing or poisoning people's minds or doing things that they shouldn't do. But we can attack ideologies and ideas, right? And that is an important thing. Now, I have taken this idea to about race all my life. All my life I have. I have lived my life not believing in the usefulness of race as a quality of judgment, right? Now, I believe that there is such a thing as race. I don't say that I'm colorblind, which is ridiculous. I don't say that I don't have reactions. I'll be perfectly honest. If I'm on a dark street and I see a black guy, Jesse Jackson said the same thing. I see a black guy behind me, I'm a little bit more alert than I am if I see a guy in a suit. On the other hand, when I used to have to go to work at 3 o'clock in the morning, the only place that was open was a disco that was mostly in New York City. It was mostly frequented by black people. And I always used to reroute around those because those guys were wearing ties and jackets and they were dating beautiful women. They weren't going to mug me. In fact, if I was mugged, they were going to come to my rescue. I could tell by the kind of people that they were. But still, you also go by, you have to make decisions in a big hurry. You have to make them on the information that you have. If I worked for TSA and I was searching people at the airport, if a young man who looked like he was from the Middle East got on my plane, I would be more worried about him than I would be worried about an old grandma getting on my plane. That is, you just have to make those calls, right? So I understand that there are races. I understand that there are cultures, and cultures are really what define people. And some of those cultures are hampered by bigotry. Some of them are hampered by poverty. Some of them are hampered by their own practices, you know, all those things. So I'm not pretending to be colorblind, But each person comes up to you and each person has to be treated as they are. And, you know, I mean, I'm not bragging about this. Ben Shapiro and Jeremy the God King give me hell about this all the time. It's the fact that I like everybody. I like everybody until they show me that I can't like them because I can't trust them, because they're going to hurt me or somebody I love or my friends are going to betray my friends. Then, you know, you lose me at that point. It's true. But there's nothing, there's not a way that you, that I, anything I can see on your face, including the fact that you're gay, that is going to make me say that you're a bad person until you show me that you're a bad person. And I will argue with you even if I think your philosophy is bad. I know many people who believe bad things who are good people. And I always use the example of George Washington because the culture is so powerful that it's, you know, it is natural for people to sink into their culture without thought, right? So it was natural for George Washington, a heroic, virtuous man who believed in liberty, to not understand that his slaves might believe in liberty too. He couldn't see it until toward the end of his life when the light bulb started to go on. It takes a long time to overcome the intellectual atmosphere that you're in. That is why I have been banging this drum about culture, culture, culture forever, because arguments don't really sway people. Culture, the air that you breathe, the intellectual air that you breathe, is what sways people. And so I know many people who believe in things that I think are just unforgivable, like abortion, but I forgive them because I know that they're living in this atmosphere. That's why I'm not angry all the time. You know, I don't walk around angry at people all the time because I get it. I get it. The culture has been spoiled. The culture has been made toxic. We have people like Catherine Marr at NPR selling lies for their own political and power purposes that infect people's brains. And people, it is really, really hard to explain to people that they're not thinking for themselves because we're not built to think for themselves. There are a few people. This is why there is a thinking class, right? Is there are a few people who are made to think for themselves. Most people accept the community that they're born into. If you're born in Nazi Germany, it's going to take you a long time before you say, you know, maybe Jewish people are so bad, you know? It's going to take a long time. If you're born in the Soviet Union, it's going to take a long time before you say, you know what, this communism stuff, you told me this was great stuff, but it's not working. And so listen, so much of what I listen to, I've been listening a lot, trying to listen a lot to the young right. And I'm listening to them because I want to hear where they think the future is going. And a lot of times, not all of them, this is not true of all of them, but a lot of times I hear them giving up on democracy, giving up on freedom, on liberty. And I think, well, what problem are you trying to solve when you say you're a monarchist, for instance? What problem are you trying to solve? Why is a monarchy going to be better? Because you know, in America for the last 30, 40 years, we have been freer than any people have ever been anywhere. The only time that the kind of freedom that we have had in America may have existed before was in the era of kings in the Bible, when people just went on their own and the only time they would have a leader was when the Philistines, or as we call them today, the Palestinians, were trying to kill them. And then they would gather together behind, you know, a Samson or something like that to fight back. But in the meantime, they were free. And until they asked for a king. And I hear these people asking for a king now, just like the Israelites did in those days. And I wonder, what problem are you trying to solve? And the more I listen to them, I got to admit, the more I feel that some of the left, right, the problem they're trying to solve are they don't like black people and they don't like homosexuals. I think that that is really the problem they try to solve. And it really bothers me that there are so many ways on the left and the right for saying you don't like black people. DEI is a way of saying you don't like black people. When you cancel classes for gifted students because you say it's not fair because black people can't get into them, you're saying that there's no way black people can get into them, right? And then on the right, they have phrases like human biodiversity or IQ. They get all hung up on IQ. And IQ is a gift. A high IQ is a gift, but it's not the only gift. There are plenty of gifts. And IQ changes over time. You know, people, when during the Great Migration, when people came up from the South, the Northern blacks had higher IQs than the Southern whites. Okay, things change, and we don't really fully know how they change. We like to talk about it as if we do, but we don't. So here's the thing. When you get back to this thing about Jesus saying, don't judge people, keep saying, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? He's trying to tell you that when you turn away to judge other people, you're turning away from something, which is you. When I was talking to people about how to regard their bodies and they immediately said, oh, yes, black gay people, we got to stop. Because they were straight. I was thinking, you're straight. You don't have to worry about gay people. Let them work out their own salvation in fear and trembling. Turn to your own body and see how you're treating yourself. That is the thing, you know. And the thing about this is when you let this go, you're so much happier. You are so much happier when you stop because you don't have to hate people for the way they live. It is right. The people who make you angry are the activists because their ideology is untrue. That's what makes you unhappy. That's what's making you angry. And there's nothing wrong with fighting against an ideology, but there is something wrong with hating people because they look differently. It actually is wrong. I mean, the left has made it so hard. They've made us so bigoted because they're so bigoted. They sell their bigotry, the anti-racism they sell is racism. So it makes us react because right-wingers react. I look at the protesters on the left. I look at those people who have disfigured, their hair dyed, they're weird, my pronouns are this and that. They look so unhappy to me. They look so miserable to me, searching so desperately for someone to tell them how not to be who they are, you know, how not to be. And I hear the groypers and the Jew haters on Twitter and on X, and it just seems to me they're filled with bile and acid. And all I can think, and it's what I say to everybody, anybody who's listening, you've tried it your way. Think about how you feel. Why not try another way? Why not try the way? On this week's interview, I'll be talking to my old friend Bill Whittle. He is doing spectacular work. I hate to admit it. I hate to be nice to the guy, but he is doing a show called What We Saw, An Empire of Terror, which is about the Cold War. As Russia continues to capture global headlines, this is an important story. It's a timely exploration of the country, Russia's tumultuous history. The complete series is streaming now exclusively on Daily Wire Plus. Explore the extreme depths of communist policies and the brutal treatment of its people under Joseph Stalin, showcasing the worst of Soviet Russia that history books refuse to reveal. This tale of terror provides a compelling presentation of the horrors that plagued the Soviet Union and the viciousness of its leaders. Understand the centuries-long history that shaped modern-day Russia and the communist ideology that threatens our own homeland right now. Watch What We Saw, An Empire of Terror, streaming now exclusively on Daily Wire Plus. If you're not a member, sign up today at dailywireplus.com. All right, Clavin Clapax.
Woo! 4 more years.
Pause. 4 more years.
Yeah!
It's an embarrassment. 4 more years, pause. I wish they had chanted that. 4 more years, pause. All right, from Philip Keener, I loved your recent interview with Mary Harrington. Isn't she great? I love Mary. I think she's wonderful. I certainly agreed with almost everything she said, but a comment she made toward the end hit me in the eye. Her self-characterization as a non-Trumpy part of the bookish right implied, if not exclaimed, that Trumpy and bookish are mutually exclusive. I have a graduate degree. I've read many books and even some in other languages. I've actually written a book. I just like the conservative world to know that there exist a few Trump supporters who are not redneck rubes. All I want to tell you about that is Mary is British. And this is the way the British almost universally look at Donald Trump. They already think we're idiots. I mean, I once said to an Englishman, how come you guys are so much more eloquent than we are? Because they never stutter. They just speak in perfect sentences all the time. And this is like, even at the bottom level, their English is better than American English. And he said, well, it's our language, dear boy. they look down at us intellectually. I'm not kidding. So the minute when they see a guy like Donald Trump, they think it's incredible that this guy would come anywhere near the halls of power. And it's not just her, it's all of them. They all think that. And I get it because, you know, it is difficult. The guy is, you know, a boor. He's a boor. There's just no question about it. You know, he does not have good manners. And I think it is easy they are always saying Republicans are stupid. He's obviously not at all. That always bothered me on the right, too, when people would say Trump was stupid. I thought, you don't have that career when you're stupid. He's obviously a very, very bright guy, but he doesn't talk in an educated way. He's not articulate and all those things, even though he knows all the best words. And so he opens us up to that target. But, you know, it's not just Mary. It is the entire island. All the British Isles are on the same page. From Sandra, I have often been disturbed by your referral of the boomer generation as being horrible. This is my generation. I must ask you to take a look at the Greatest Generation and what they did to the church. Look at what they did to the liturgy, art, music, rituals of the Catholic Church. Look at how they taught the priests to become as empty as the churches they destroyed. From Sandy. You know, Sandy, the thing about this is, though, I of course, but the Greatest Generation is called that not because of who they were. They were called that because they got through the Depression. They fought World War II. They built the greatest economy, the best period of American history, which was probably the 50s into the early 60s. And so they get credit for that, whereas we were spoiled. We didn't have to do any of those things. And we basically dragged the country down and destroyed in the 60s, destroyed its culture for our own childish adolescent way. You know, they compare it to an adolescent who suddenly discovers that dad is imperfect and now thinks dad sucks, right? Because he can't see that all people are imperfect. And even his dad, who he looked up to, is imperfect. So now he thinks dad sucks. So that's the way we, in my generation, felt about America. We thought, you know, this is the greatest country in the world. We're living in this privilege. Oh, but yeah, they sometimes did wrong things because it's full of people. This is the thing. We don't love America because it's good, because it's full of people. It can't be good. We love America because liberty is good, and America has provided more liberty than any country ever on earth, and it's provided it to everybody everywhere. Anyone who has political liberty in the world owes it to owes it to the United States of America. So the thing I would say about their generation, all generations are also full of bad people and all do bad things. But at the end of the Greatest Generation, America was sitting pretty. At the end of our generation, which is now, America is swirling the drain. And I think that's why I make those remarks. As I always say, I wish the boomer generation could die without taking me with it. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem, I've applied, but that doesn't seem to be a possibility. All right. It is now time for you to become a member of the Daily Wire. What is the thing? It's Daily Wire. Don't have it up in front of me. It's Daily Wire. dailywire.com/subscribe, promo code Klavan, and you get something off. I think two months free and the police come to visit your house because you use the word Klavan. But go ahead and do that, because otherwise you will now be dropped into Klavanlessness instead of coming with the rest of us into member block.